You're listening to Unexpecting, the podcast bringing you real conversations from those of us who have suffered pregnancy and infant loss. With comfort and hope for the future, I'm your host, Ashley Bitterman. Today I'm talking to Christine as she shares her story of suffering three traumatic pregnancy losses. She perfectly captures the real emotions associated with pregnancy after loss and highlights some of the gaps in medical care and support for lost parents.
So, Christine, I am so happy to be talking to you for a number of reasons. One, we actually have very similar stories. And two, we're basically neighbors, although we've never met. We both live in the same county in New York, and we're probably like 15 minutes away from each other. So yeah. I'm very excited to have a member of the community and a neighbor.
I'm excited too. Thank you so much for having me.
Amazing. So as always, let's start with one, two, three. What is one thing you can't live without? Two of your all-time favorite movies, and three celebrities or icons you'd want to have dinner with?
Oh my gosh. Okay. One thing I can't live without is my garden. It's my therapy, my plant babies, my flower babies. I'm out there almost every day. It's my life. It's my therapy.
Oh, I see pictures and I get it. It's incredible.
It's the best. It keeps me grounded and just, you know, it's the best. What was the second one?
Two of your all-time favorite movies.
Oh my God. Well, I'm such a nerd and I'm like so lame.
Great. Love the introduction.
I'm literally going to tell you the two that came to my head. I'm not sure that these are my top favorites because I'm not really thinking about this much, but the two that came to my mind when you said that were A Night at the Roxbury and Zoolander.
Oh, amazing choices. Amazing.
I'm so lame. How lame am I?
Why is that lame? What, mine is Step Brothers.
Oh, nice.
So yes. Yeah. Same thing.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Same genre. Awesome. Great choices. And then three celebrities you want to dinner with.
Okay. I think his name, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Sam Heughan, is that his name, from Outlander, the actor?
Oh gosh, my sister is obsessed with him.
I'm so obsessed. I would just love to have dinner with him. He's like a great human. okay, yeah, I would say Jennifer Aniston would be super cool to talk to. And then... like, this is also lame, but like Kim Kardashian is kind of fascinating to me.
Fascinating.
Like, she's so fascinating and, you know, I have opinions and stuff, but like, it would be kind of cool to ask her some questions.
Totally. With no cameras. Like,
yes. So no, I would say her too.
Yes. Just like real, like, who is she actually?
So I would have a date with Sam and then like fangirl over Jennifer Aniston and then just be like super curious about Kim Kardashian.
Yes. Oh, that's good. That is good. Each one has a different, totally different vibe.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. So Christine, tell me a little bit about your childhood, your upbringing.
Yeah. So I feel like I had a pretty run of the mill childhood. I am the eldest of three girls, really tight knit, grew up with my sisters, grew up in a really nice neighborhood. I had friends. I was an athlete. I was a swimmer for my whole life. So really kind of, disciplined with, my athletics. I was a good student. I got a full ride to the University of New Hampshire from swimming. Wow. And my grades. And yeah, amazing. Like I really had a great upbringing. We were lucky to not have tragedies or anything like that. I wasn't really exposed to much loss or grief at all in my childhood.
And you have known your husband now for a very, very long time. So talk to me a little bit about that.
We go way back, me and Alex. We went to school together. We grew up in the same town and we were in all the schools together. And we started dating when we were 17 and 18, right at the end of high school. And yeah, we went to different colleges, but came back home, you know, after school was done and got back together, and the rest is history.
I mean, distance makes the heart grow fonder.
Yep. I think that the distance while we were in college definitely did that for us.
Yeah. Oh, I love stories like that.
It's so I know, right? Yeah. It's fun. Different. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So getting into your story a little bit, you've been pregnant mm-hmm. multiple times. Mm-hmm. You do have a few living children. Mm-hmm. So tell me about your history with pregnancy. How many times have you been pregnant, and how many of those actually resulted in healthy living babies at the end?
Yeah. So I've been pregnant 5 times and I have 2 living children. I was completely blindsided and unaware of how difficult childbearing years could be.
Yep.
Literally no clue. You know, we got married and we weren't ready to have kids right away. So we didn't even start trying. I didn't even know that it could take a long time. I didn't even know that you could possibly need help getting pregnant or not get pregnant at all. Or, you know, I had a cousin who had a miscarriage and I had heard about it, but it was one of those things that was like, nah, like, you know, we're just going to do it. And that's it. I'm not going to really think about what could happen. Little did I know. So I got pregnant pretty easily once we decided that we were going to try. And I had a miscarriage at 6 weeks. So that was the blindsided one. I mean, they're all blindsiding, but that one really like kind of shattered my innocence, my naivety, my, you know, that blissful ignorance that you have, I feel like, before entering into this phase of life, like just was completely shattered. It was filled with a lot of shame and guilt. That, I mean, a lot of the losses that I've had are like that, but I felt like I couldn't talk about it. I felt like I was pressured to just move on, keep going. Like a lot of the comments around that for me and from even my closest loved ones in that time were like, just get pregnant again. You can have another one right away. Like you're healthy, you're young, da da da, you know, all those bullshit things that people say.
Yeah. Where they think, and I always try to give people benefit of the doubt and say their intentions are good.
Yes.
They're trying to make us feel better, but it's not usually the right thing to say.
Yeah. Their intentions are good and they are trying to make us feel better, but it doesn't take the sting away and it doesn't make it hurt any less.
Yeah.
Like words can be so piercing. So, and then now it's a lot of what I talk about on Instagram is like how to have those good intentions and say a supportive thing instead of saying like an empty platitude or really something that is only serving the purpose of making the person who's saying it feel more comfortable.
Yes.
It's not making the person who's experienced the grief and the pain feel any better. It's only serving the other person's comfortableness level.
Totally. That's so, you know what I mean? Accurate. Yes. So and like checking off the box for them that like,
yeah,
I did my part. I said something. I did this. Mm-hmm.
I can't really handle what you're feeling right now. So I'm just going to say this and I'm good.
Yeah.
It doesn't help the person who's in pain at all. And that needs to be acknowledged. Like as good as the intentions are, great, but you're still impacting the person who's hurting.
Yes.
With those words. So anyway, that was my first experience. My first pregnancy ended in an early loss and like just completely, you know, innocence shattered. So then we tried again right away. I actually got pregnant right away again. And then I was in this pregnancy after loss, like, thing, which I know you know, and it's just terrifying. It's really, really, really freaking scary. And again, it's the people around you want to be like, this is so exciting and yay. And, oh my God, you must be so excited. And like, I just wasn't. I was not. I was just scared because every time I went to the bathroom, I was expecting to see blood.
Exactly. Of course.
So yeah, it just was not easy. Lots of perinatal anxiety and just, you know, of course you are hoping for a good outcome.
Right.
But it's like every day is you're just kind of waiting for the other foot to drop.
Of course. And how like are you
literally for 10 that? Months?
What were you, you know, how are you dealing with that perinatal anxiety?
Yeah. So I wasn't at that pregnancy. I just, I was still working, managing our family's farm store, and I just kind of ignored that I was pregnant. Like, it probably wasn't the best thing to do, but I just, it was self-preservation. Now through a lot of therapy, I've talked to my therapist and realized that this was how I was self-preserving. I didn't connect with my baby. I wasn't like, you know, over the moon, like non-loss moms who are pregnant, you know, that are like rubbing their belly and like, you know, yeah. I just wasn't into it.
You couldn't accept it because
You
were not into yourself up for that same like crushing disappointment.
Yep. Kind of just really keeping the guard up. Almost the whole time. And then it was crazy. Something switched in me later in the pregnancy. I would say maybe when I was around maybe the third trimester. When I was like, okay, I actually might be bringing this baby home. Mm-hmm. You know, like we didn't set up a nursery. We didn't do anything at all. I did not buy baby clothes. I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Until the very end there. But in the third trimester, I started feeling like great and beautiful. And I was probably the happiest that I've ever been during the third trimester of my son's pregnancy. And yeah. And then all of a sudden I was like really hopeful and all about it. And then I had a very traumatic birth with him. So that, yeah, but
what happened?
So I went into labor, my water broke, just randomly, you know, like kind of like the movies, it was crazy. and it, there was blood and meconium. And So I knew that that was not great. I had wanted like a no intervention birth at the hospital, but I wanted to like have my body labor and do whatever I could on my own for as long as possible. But it just wasn't going to work out that way. So I had a C-section. I was in labor for 36 hours, which, it was a lot, but at a certain point, his heart started decelerating, like the heart rate of the baby was not great. And I was like, take me in, like, let's just go. So I feel like that was also sort of like a loss response. Cause the second that they were like, you know, something's weird, I was like, cut me open. Like,
yes.
So, but it was an emergency situation and it was, you know, just the C-section was not my favorite experience. The operating room is a kind of a trigger location for me now.
Oh my God. And it's not a fun place to
welcome
to the world.
Yep.
Especially unplanned.
Exactly. Unplanned. Yeah. Unplanned C-section is not great, but fast forwarding to my daughter's birth, which was a planned C-section. It was a fantastic experience. So
okay.
It's crazy that I have both of those.
Yes.
So that was my second pregnancy, successful, healthy, living child. So, I then got pregnant again. We, you know, my husband and I consciously decided that we were ready to expand our family, and got pregnant again in July of 2019. And you know, run of the mill, I was happy. It was a little bit less anxiety provoking in the beginning there than my pregnancy with Luca, because I guess it wasn't like the next one after a loss.
Right. And you could see actually what could happen.
Yeah. I had a, you know, if you want to call it successful outcome. And yeah, so I was kind of just like riding off of that. And then, you know, all the statistics, like it's 1 in 4, blah, blah, blah. I was like, all right, so I'm good. Like I had a miscarriage. That's the one in four.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, statistics mean absolutely nothing to me now. So the pregnancy was great. I had a toddler. I mean, it wasn't great. I was like sick and puking and it was hard, but I was really, really just engulfed in my 18-month-old and running around chasing him. Didn't have anxiety really at all. And then we actually did an announcement photo shoot. It's so crazy. Cause like, I loved that photo shoot. It was an amazing, like it was so beautiful and amazing. But now I think back and I'm like, I just almost cringe at myself sometimes. Mm. Like, you know, how did I have the audacity to do that? And I know that's just me being like crazy inside my head, but like, you know, I was like, how did I just couldn't believe that I was like so sure that we were gonna have a living child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That I had a photo shoot.
Totally. But
for an announcement.
You also, this is the thing about pregnancy after a loss, is you are just robbed of joy. You're robbed of all of these little, the photo shoots, gender reveal, whatever it is, you're robbed of that because you're living in constant fear and anxiety. So I actually think it's awesome that you allowed yourself to give yourself that experience.
In retrospect, yes. I am like now years later in retrospect, like the photos that I have of that pregnancy are some of my most prized possessions. And I am so happy that I did that photo shoot. But like right after losing that pregnancy, which I'll get to, I was like, what the hell? Like, why was I so sure? Like this, you know, I'm so naive. How could I have thought that we would have brought this baby home, you know, like
just
being really crazy inside my head.
I get that. And looking back and like looking at the pictures and being like, she had no idea.
Pictures. And I'm like, how could I do that? But now again, it took me a while. It took me at least several months, if not almost a year to be so thankful that I have those photos. So now, whenever I can on my Instagram, I make sure I say that message, like no matter where you are in your pregnancy, take those photos. Yeah. So we had that photo shoot. We had the announcement photo shoot. I was going to have my 12-week scan the next week. And I got the photos back and like literally ready to post. I had my Instagram post, like ready to post. I go to my 12-week scan, the NT scan. And again, one of those things where I'm like, why was I doing that? But of course I was doing that. I was filming the ultrasound technician and the screen. My husband was there with me. This was still 2019 when husbands were allowed in the room.
Yeah.
And we were holding hands. We were like just giddy talking to each other. And I was filming it so I could show my parents and his parents later that day. And the ultrasound technician is just dead silent. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And she just doesn't say anything. And she says, I'm going to be right back. I'm going to go get the doctor. And I could see the heartbeat. I knew the baby was alive. I was like, okay, so, you know, maybe there's just, I don't know, something.
Did it seem weird to you?
It seemed super weird. I was like, I see the baby moving and the baby has a heartbeat. So what's up? Like, okay. So at that point I stopped filming. And now I'm getting anxious. And the doctor comes back in and, or comes in and he's looking for a while, silent. I'm like, hello, tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
So then he's like, I don't remember exactly what he said, because it's just a blur. The whole appointment. But something about the baby's limbs don't look fully developed. And at that point at 12 weeks, I guess the baby is supposed to be like fully what it is. And then they just get bigger.
Yeah.
But his limbs looked not right. And, his NT, so that point where they measure in the back of the neck, was really big, which is a not great indicator for the health of the baby. So they're explaining all of this to my husband and I just like, I don't remember a lot of it, because I think I just kind of went like out of my, it was like an out of body experience.
Yes.
Just hearing these words about the baby I'm carrying. So they kind of ushered us out and we went into a room and we were talking more and they took blood and they were doing like, you know, more tests and we were sending out stuff for genetic testing. And then he was like, okay, I'm getting on the phone right now with Columbia. We're going to schedule you for a CVS because you're right at the point where we can't do a CVS anymore. And it became like rushed and crazy. And
what is a CVS?
A CVS is, so it's kind of like an amnio where they go in and they take tissue from the placenta. Well, for the CVS, it was for the placenta. I'm not exactly sure what they do for the amnio. But the main difference is that they go cervically, through your cervix, with a long, long needle, and they can safely somehow get to the placenta and take tissue. And then they test that tissue, for genetic abnormalities. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what that was. So he was telling me that I had to go do this. I had to go down to Columbia, down to New York City to go do this. I didn't even know what it was. And he was like, okay, and I'm going to schedule you for a genetic counselor appointment and all this stuff. And I was like, is something really wrong? And that's when he was like, the baby really doesn't look healthy. The baby's alive, but the baby does not look healthy. And we need to see what's going to happen with this. And I was like, what?
And this was all the same appointment?
Same appointment. Yeah. So it was like, now digesting it, looking back on it, I'm so thankful that he acted so quickly and that he saw these abnormalities at such an early time, because I know that for a lot of women, too many women, it's caught really later. It's caught later. And it's terrible all around, but I am thankful that he saw it on that scan and that we got the ball rolling like right there. I was 13 weeks at the time.
Yeah, how do you process all of that?
Yeah.
Like, you're going in, you're videotaping, you're so excited. It's mm-hmm. it's so jarring to get
jarring. That information. Jarring is the word. Jarring and traumatic. The walking into an OB office in a sonogram room is just never ever in my life going to be the same. Because you literally go from that, the highest of highs, to the lowest of lows.
Yes.
In a split second.
Was there any sense of hope still when you came out of that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, there was still a sense of hope because they didn't know exactly what was wrong. So I was more just processing, our baby's going to have a really big abnormality, disability. I didn't know exactly what it was going to be. I started researching Down syndrome and, you know, I just started going crazy into like researching what it would be like to have a child with a disability.
Yeah.
We still had no idea what it was, you know, what was actually going on, but there was still some hope. Like the doctor didn't say at that appointment, like, this is not compatible with life.
Yeah.
He didn't say any of that. He just like, we're going to do more testing and see what exactly is going on. The baby just does not look healthy. Mm. At that, like, I still had no idea that terminating a pregnancy was really a thing. Like, I feel so naive saying that right now, but I had no clue. I had no clue that women could go through this. Yeah. Which I literally feel like so dumb saying that now, but
isn't that crazy? Because think of how many of us have gone through it, and like, I feel the same way. And it is so common, but people are, there's so much shame around it.
Oh my God. It's the most shame. God.
No one knows about it.
So it just kind of went quickly from there. The next week I went down to Columbia and had the CVS, and really just not great experience. And I'm really sorry if anyone has to have that procedure. It was not comfortable, you know, reading about it. I was like, oh, okay, maybe it won't be that bad. It was super uncomfortable to the point of painful, physically. And then it took a really, really long time.
Oh my gosh.
I think we were there for maybe 3 hours, and they were collecting the tissue, and they did this even bigger scan. It was like almost a mini anatomy scan on the baby at that point. And again, not really many words were spoken between us and the doctors. It was just kind of really like medical and just
like routine.
Yeah. Routine kind of, and that doesn't make you feel great. And we also met with the genetic counselor at that appointment, and she was just telling us, she had gotten my blood work back that said it was, if I forget exactly now, but it was like a pretty big chance of Down syndrome.
Okay.
But still like not really any specifics, but like my blood work didn't look good. The NT scan was bad. That's why we did this extra CV, or that's why we did the CVS and like a mini anatomy scan, but still it was like, you know, we're going to send the CVS, the placenta tissue out for testing. And then she was explaining to us all the different steps that happen. And I feel like it was like 5 weeks. Yeah. It was 5 weeks long of just every week we got a phone call from her, and she was like, okay, it's not this, but we're continuing to test for this. And this test was good, but we're still continuing to test for this. So it was like, each week we were like, okay, so it's not this. So, you know, maybe this is going to be okay. Maybe
5 weeks is an eternity. Yeah. I mean, how do you go through?
It was like a limbo.
Knowing you're carrying a baby that you know isn't healthy, but you don't even know what's wrong for 5 weeks.
5 weeks. It was pretty torturous. The waiting was just pretty horrible.
And you don't want to, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I assume you don't want to create some sort of emotional bond or connection.
Yeah. So at that point I was already like, all right, I'm cutting myself off. I went back to that mindset of where I was with my pregnancy with my first son, of like, I can't really connect with this baby. Whereas in the pregnancy, I was connecting with the baby. And I was, you know, but now I was self-preserving again. So it was like 5 weeks of that. During that time, I went back for another anatomy scan. They called it an early anatomy scan at 16 weeks. And they were able to like get solid measurements of everything. So it was at that appointment where, you know, if the world came crashing down at the NT scan appointment, it was at that next appointment that just like, I literally wanted to die.
Oh my God.
Just, I looked at Alex and I was like, I can't do this. So that was the anatomy scan was really, it was traumatic, I want to say, because again, it was just silence for probably an hour and a half, 2 hours of the actual ultrasound. And then they brought us into a conference room. So they weren't saying anything to us the whole time again.
Oh,
which, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad, but it was rough.
I can't be good.
No.
You want to feel some sense of comfort, even if something, the outcome isn't bad. You want to know somebody's on your team and on your side.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just nothing. And my husband was sitting there the whole time, just holding my hand, you know, what could we even say to each other? So then the scan itself was over and they brought us into a room, and that's when they explained what they found out about our baby. And it was just horrible. He had an abnormality in his genetic makeup that was basically causing a form of skeletal dysplasia. And not only were his bones not forming at the correct rate, so they were like super, super small, he had no collagen in his bones at all. So they were just brittle, no collagen. And they were very stunted. So his whole body was measuring, I forget what the actual like ratio was, but it was extremely, I think it was like the third percentile or something.
Oh, wow.
Really, really, really small, small baby. So yeah, there were two OBs in the room, two genetic counselors, and the ultrasound technician. We were literally at a conference table. And that's where they explained to us everything that was going on with his body. And that's when they told us that his condition was not compatible with life. So,
gosh.
Yeah, it's just words that you never think you're going to hear or just never even knew existed. Like,
yes, exactly.
Not compatible with life. Like, so what was he doing inside my body?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so devastating, and so confusing.
Yeah, and just horrific. And I feel like I was a zombie in that meeting. My husband was asking questions and I was just like, I think just zoned out. Like, I again don't really remember a lot of it. They were like drawing diagrams at one point and I was just like what?
Oh my God.
And that's when they started bringing up like your options, you know, and I still at that point, I like had no idea that terminating a pregnancy happened.
And that the only option was termination. It was just the matter of how you would terminate.
No. So I actually really respect the care team that were taking care of us at Columbia. They never even really explicitly said, like suggested termination.
Okay.
They were more so explaining, like they were like, so here are the options. Like, we can wait another 2 weeks and do another anatomy scan and see what's happening at that point. And they were, so one of the biggest things with our son's body, aside from, everything being so stunted in growth, was specifically his thoracic chamber. So your chest, his bones were not growing. And you could see it clearly on the ultrasound that he was kind of a bell shape. So really tiny, tiny little chest and like big belly. They were like, this is our biggest concern. His ribs are not growing to be able to encompass his lungs. So at a certain point, literally his bones will break from just the growth of his body.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I know I'm getting really like specific, but I feel like people need to know these things.
It's just,
yeah. It's like, I still can't believe that this happened to us. So they were explaining all this to us and they were saying we can wait and we can do another scan. And I was like, I didn't have to ask that because I already said not compatible with life, but going through my head, I was like, what is the quality of life? Will he live? Like, blah, 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 all this stuff. And it was just like, no, he's not going to live. He is not going to live for 1 second outside of your body.
Oh my gosh.
So then that's when it became really clear to me, like, okay, only have two options. It's carry to term and possibly subject my son, depending on how long he makes it, to horrific pain inside my body or during the birth process of his bones, you know, breaking, or terminate the pregnancy and give him a peaceful death.
Yes.
And like, once I realized that that was where I was standing, is the world stopped. Like the world ceased to exist. It just was so unprepared for making end of life decisions for my child who hadn't even been born yet.
Right.
Or ever. It's like
unimaginable.
Unimaginable. Literally. So my husband made the phone call to the doctor's office to schedule the termination process. It took me a while to decide how to do it. I remember that like really, really tore me up and is still one of the things that I am so torn up about to this day is, do I do labor and delivery or do I have a D&E?
Mm-hmm.
I ended up opting for the D&E. His body couldn't handle it. And I didn't think I could handle seeing what was going to happen when he was delivered vaginally. It just, that made me more upset than anything.
Yeah. I made the same decision that you did.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a hard time with the decision in the moment. I was very much like, and looking back, I almost feel like a coward that I was like, no, nope, I don't want to see.
Yeah,
I don't want to know. Take this out of me and I need to move on with my life. And mm-hmm. I still, that's the one thing I go back and forth with, was like, was that the right call?
Yeah.
Was I a coward? But that in the moment, that's, I went through the same experience.
I have the exact same feelings as you. And I still, it's, you know, I still think about it to this day. And I still question whether that was the right decision. But in the moment, I feel like we made the best decision that we could with the information that we had. And it's one of the most traumatic parts of my whole TFMR story.
Yes. And the thing is, there's no right decision. You know,
there's really not.
If we had chosen the other decision, we'd be like, we might look back and be like, well, why did we do that? Why did we put the baby through that? What, you know, like no matter what, it's not a right decision or a wrong decision. It's just what you did in the moment. And
it's such an insane, unimaginable experience that like, of course you're going to question every little move you made.
Exactly.
I have to say, as awful and terrible as an experience as this is, like the care team that I had was like almost perfect for me. They treated me with respect. They were compassionate. Like the doctor who performed the procedure was one of the most compassionate people, let alone doctors, that I've ever come into contact with. She did things like hold my hand. I was hysterical crying. She said, it's okay to cry. This is horrible.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, it was literally my first taste at someone being like, it's okay to feel shitty because this is shitty.
Yes.
She like, I'm so thankful to her for so many reasons, but she was like the first one that allowed me to feel how I felt about it and know that those feelings were valid. But yeah, I just could not believe I was forced to make a decision like this. It does not feel like a decision. It's not really, not a decision. It was the most compassionate and merciful thing we could have done for our son. I have no regrets over like terminating the pregnancy in general. No regrets. It was the absolute best decision for him, for us, for our family. So another weird thing was when we left that like bad scan appointment, the grief counselor had given me, or no, not grief counselor, genetic counselor had given me So there should have been a grief counselor there.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, like pre-procedure should be a grief counselor. She had given me some resources to read through, and it was like a couple of articles and like scientific journal writings. And one of them was actually a video that was so profoundly helpful to me in deciding whether to labor and deliver or do surgical. Yeah, that video, if anyone ever messages me on Instagram or wherever and is like, I'm going through this right now, like, do you have any things you can help me with or anything like that? I actually send that video sometimes because I'm like, I had a really hard time with this, and I don't know that many people know about that video, but it's really, really helpful.
Wow, I didn't know about that, but that's...
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, it's shitty. It's a video about how to choose how to lose your baby, but
wow,
that week of my interim, like, you know, in between, it was really helpful to me. But anyway, one of the articles was about abortion. And I was like, why is she sending me an article about abortion? Like, this is weird. And I read it and I was like, fuck, this is what's happening to me.
Oh,
and
God.
It did not click in my brain that I was literally going through the same thing. Like, this was an abortion. It did not at all register for me that that's what I was doing.
And that word has such a negative connotation. Like, I didn't have an abortion. I terminated my pregnancy. Like,
right.
We're afraid to use that word.
We're afraid to use it.
Such a negative connotation.
Yeah. So that's how I was like then when I was going through it. Now I obviously am completely fine with using the word abortion, and I like the stigma and everything attached to it. Like, I mean, I don't know if it will never change probably because people are so opinionated on it, but they have no clue.
Nope.
Yeah,
and isn't it such a shame that in addition to having the worst pain of your life, you have to have this fear that you can't talk about it because people will judge you for it.
Yes.
So unfair.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I feel like that goes for any loss. Like, you feel so scared to talk about it because you're afraid you're going to be judged. So yeah, like you said, on top of the worst pain of your entire life, something that's going to stick with you and be traumatic for the rest of your life, you feel like you can't even talk about it.
Nope.
Because of our society.
Yep. And people will judge you for
it's so shitty. Yeah. That's why I haven't shared it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you go through this horrific, devastating, heartbreaking experience. And how do you, I'm not even going to say heal, because you're always going to be healing from it, but how do you heal enough that you're like, we're ready to do this again?
Yeah, right. How do you get to that point? So this is one of the things that I talk in therapy about, because like it happened very fast again for me. So after Liam died, I just was waiting on pins and needles for my period to come back so that we could try again.
Yep.
I think it was a combination of still wanting to expand our family living children wise. And also that my body was still supposed to be pregnant.
Yes.
And I like just innately, like I had no control over that. My body was like, I want to be pregnant.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you felt this, but for me, it was like, I wanted to be pregnant while I still would have been pregnant.
Yes.
And so every month that went by that I wasn't getting pregnant, it was like extra devastating because I was like, okay, I only have 2 more months now. Okay. I only have 1 more. Okay. It has to be this time. And never happened.
But I was the same way
where I was mentally.
I was the same way. And yeah, like a countdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was the same exact way though. Like just so desperately wanting to be pregnant and wanting to be pregnant while I was still supposed to be pregnant.
Yes, exactly.
Because then I did get pregnant. I got pregnant 4 months after, wait, November, December, 3 months. I got pregnant after Liam died.
Wow.
And had a miscarriage. So then that threw me into just the most intense anger I've ever experienced in my life. Just anger at everything, at the universe, at my body, at, you know, my life. Like, why was this happening? And it was so
confusing. Didn't you feel like I paid my dues?
Yeah.
I had to have paid my dues, like, this time.
Yeah, like so much.
Yeah.
I had a miscarriage. I had a termination. I now had another miscarriage. I was like, what is wrong with me? So it was the most intense anger I've ever felt. And it also almost like spurred me into action as far as like getting tests. Like I got, I went to a specialist and I was like, test me for everything that you know possible. Because when what happened with Liam happened, we got tested genetically, both my husband and I, and they found out that we were not carriers. It was not like a genetic pass down, not a hereditary thing.
Did you get any answers?
They found that. So after my first loss, we found out that I had a thyroid condition. I had an underactive thyroid. So that was back in 2017. I went right on Synthroid and I've been on that ever since. So my thyroid hormones have been controlled that way. And then this round of the testing, they found they're like, I guess it's, they still don't know a lot, you know, like they can do all these tests and there's still just this factor of like, well, we don't really know, but you could try this and it might help.
Yeah.
So we found out that I have some sort of hereditary blood clotting.
Antiphospholipid syndrome?
Yes. Yes.
I got tested for that.
That's what I have. So it's confusing to me. I didn't really understand it. I saw a hematologist and I still didn't really understand it. So I don't know much about it, but they were like, you have to go on Lovenox for any future pregnancies and take baby aspirin. And I was like, okay, that's what I'll do.
Yep.
So that's what I did after those tests. I ended up getting pregnant again. And my fifth pregnancy, I found out I was pregnant. I got the positive test. And literally, I think it was 3 days later, they announced the global pandemic. That was
fantastic.
So I was like, oh, as if my anxiety wasn't enough already.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That was my daughter's pregnancy, which ended in a healthy baby girl living child outcome. It's like, I never know what to say. I'm like,
I know,
you know, it for lost moms like us, I feel like it's you understand that language, but a normal person talking to me, I'm like, I have two living children.
They're yes.
Like, why are you saying that? Yes. Like, well, because I have three.
Yeah.
But exactly. One's dead. Yeah. So
what you have, so now you have two living children.
Living children. I have a 4-year-old and a 1.5-year-old.
Oh, so fun. How does your loss, your losses impact your role as a mom to these two children?
Every single second of every day, my role as a mom is impacted by the son that we lost. Like almost, I feel like everything that we do, I don't know. It feels weird saying that, but Liam is so present in our home. We talk about him. We have his ashes. We have our little Jizo statue that we love. We have his footprints, you know, we have like frames. I have some of his ultrasound pictures around the house. He is here. We have a garden planted for him actually right now. April 11th was his due date. So we plant daffodils and we planted a magnolia for him and they all bloom this month, which is really comforting and reminds us of him. He's really intertwined into every aspect of our life, just like our living children are.
Mm-hmm. So my last question for you is, what would you say to somebody who might come to experience a devastating loss like this in the future that you wish you would have known before you experienced yours?
I think I would say that you know you the best, you know your family the best, you know what's best for your baby. And whatever decision that you make is made out of love and compassion and doing what's best for your baby and your family. And you know what, saying that out loud, that's literally the same advice that I would give to a new mom with a living newborn.
Oh,
isn't so it funny? This whole journey that I've been on, I see so many parallels with like women who are postpartum with living babies and like what we should be saying and doing to support them. And also women whose babies die. And I feel like if people just realize that the support that women need is pretty similar, it would be easier for people to talk to people who have dead babies.
That's, you know, like an accurate and valid, great point.
Yeah. So that would be my advice. Like you're a mom, you're making and moms make the best decisions they can for their children and their families. And that's literally what you're doing. You're making this decision out of love. And I know it doesn't feel like a decision because it's not really. But you love your baby and nothing will ever change that. No pregnancy outcome will change that. You love your baby from the second that you know that you're pregnant with them.
Yep.
And if people just remembered that and they didn't like, you know, I feel like sometimes when I talk about being a lost mom, I'm like this like shunned woman.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
And I like people celebrate the pregnancy so much and they put so much emphasis, and you can even go through announcement posts and see comments. We love this baby already so much. And then what does that mom hear when that baby dies? Nothing. Crickets.
Yes.
Like, why does that have to change how you support a woman who had a baby? It just died.
Yeah.
Well, that's my whole thing that frustrates me.
I know people just don't understand it if they haven't been through it, because mm-hmm. we don't talk about it enough, and they don't know how to show up for people who have gone through mm-hmm. one of the worst experiences of their lives.
Yeah. You're always a mom.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for doing this. I know you said multiple times
I feel like I could talk so much more. We could do this again if you want.
Oh, that would be amazing, because I really feel grateful. You said this is not something that you dive into a lot or really share. So I so appreciate you sharing it with me. There are so many similarities between our stories. definitely we'll have to meet up in person next time.
Yes, please. At the farm, wherever. Yes. Yeah, I would love to.
Thank you so much. I will be following along your journey. I'm so glad we connected, and let's do this again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Unexpecting. Join our community by following us on Instagram at Unexpecting Podcast. If you'd like to share your story on our show, email us at unexpectingpodcast@gmail.com. You can support this podcast by visiting anchor.fm/unexpecting. Be kind to yourself, be patient, and remember, today's teardrops are tomorrow's rainbows. Take care.